the country with your host, Dave Woods. This is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal.
Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Saskatchewan country artist Blake Emmons won Album of the Year at the 2012 Saskatchewan Country Music Awards. He was host of the CTV show Funny Farm for 5 years. He's starred on Broadway, been a game show host. He's actively involved in several charitable organizations as well. Lots more stuff we're going to get to on the show, plus we've got songs from that award-winning album to play. It's my pleasure now to welcome Blake Emmons to the show. Hey, Blake.
It's my pleasure. I just love your opening fiddles. I mean, that's my kind of country, pal. I love it.
That is great. Yeah, I love the fiddles, too, and great way to kick things off. And we got some great songs from you. Let's start off the top. I mentioned winning Album of the Year at this year's Saskatchewan Country Music Association Awards. Now, tell us about that.
Well, first of all, it was a real big surprise because I hadn't been in the studio in years, and This album came out of a labor of love that I wanted to do, my kids wanted me to do, blah, blah, blah. And, hey, there was some really neat, incredible competition. Artists that I really respect and admire are young up-and-comers and young guys that are out there kicking. And when they said Blake Emmons, I went, I choked up. And but the feeling inside was, gee, they get it. One of the writers and artists in Saskatchewan and in Canada, well, the world for that matter, that I truly admire is Jay Semcoe. He's like one of my new heroes. When I first heard him sing Before You Leave Canada, you know, I was there in Nashville, and I teared up listening to it. And to get to meet him and have him say congratulations, it meant a lot, a big lot.
I'll bet. And we got a lot of stuff to cover because you've done so much and you're still doing tons of stuff. So we're just going to go back, but let's start off, Blake, with maybe some of your influences when you were starting to get involved in music. Who are the artists that were influencing you and inspired you?
Entertainers like Farron Young.
Right.
When I first started touring, he'd take me, sit there backstage. I remember one night in Kitchener, he sat there and told me, you know, what to do and how to think and da-da-da. And Ray Price, I was really fortunate in those days. I got to tour with those guys, but the guy that really opened the door for me was Carl Smith when I came on Carl Smith's Country Music Hall. And that's where I met my friends for life, like musicians like Johnny Burke and Mel O'Coyne and the real true, you know, the guts of Canadian country music at the time. And when Carl opened the doors in Nashville for me, it kind of went from there, from the next to the next, and a man by the name of Bill Graham brought me there and said, much to Jim Ed Brown's chagrin, this kid's going to co-star with you on a TV show. And I went, wow, this is great. I get $69 a show, and I'm a star. Then I found out the star was rat spelled backwards.
That was called The Country Place. So what was that like working with Jim Ed Brown? So many of us know him for his great songs, and he's hosted a lot of shows.
Oh, I loved it. This guy can sing, you know. It was great. And of course, then I got to meet, because of that, at the time, Showbiz Incorporated was syndicating TV shows, and that's how I got with Porter and Dolly. And then I opened for Dolly a few years later, and one thing begat the next, and because of it didn't have anything to do with my singing or anything. The fact was that they opened the door, and I made my first appearance in the Grand Ole Opry, and that was where I met my real true friends, and that I cherished right to this day. There's a couple of them still remaining, but back then it was Bill Carlisle, Grandpa Jones, String Bean, man, and I got a place out in the country, and we used to pitch horseshoes every Tuesday night at my buddy's place, And I learned so much about our history from these guys. And Tex Ritter. Tex Ritter was the first one that ever got me to do a charitable function in Chattanooga. And when I did that one, and I realized, holy cow, I get to do what I like to do, plus I get to help some other kids and people and blah, 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 that kind of thing. And that's what really hooked me.
Charitable work that you've done since then, I mean, we're going to touch on that, but it must be great to be able to do that. And also in your songs, Blake, that you write and perform, there are messages in it too. And the songs reach out to people and can teach them lessons and maybe guide them in the right direction.
Yeah, that's the real hope, Dave. When I wrote them, like there's a story behind each one, as there usually is with storytellers, I guess, like Tom T. Hall. What a great storyteller.
Yeah.
Mine are more to make you think, because that's what I do when I work with kids or when I speak in prisons or when I talk with our military guys. And it was just something that came to me. I'll step you forward a little bit. Here I was in a position in my life. I had two network TV shows, a syndicated show, and I was at the time married into a family that said, when's he going to get a real job?
Right.
So I was stumbling. And you know, and also challenged by a thing that throwback to NOM, a thing called PTSD, which I didn't know I had at the time. It's just one of those things. But a man by the name of Lou Tice, who became my mentor, taught me that it was okay to be me, and it started to show in my writing. And a lot of my writers now that write for me or for our company, they've come through the same kind of not so much training, but they've heard what I talk. It's pretty positive stuff.
Now, do you recall, like, yeah, it is a joy. Do you recall when you wrote your first song, and did it come easy to you writing songs, or did you take a bit of time to perfect the art or get a lot better at it anyway?
I have what I call incoming, and I'm scary when it happens because I'm worse than people texting, I think. Because I carry a yellow pad with me, right? And
right.
When I'm on a long drive, I don't know why, that's usually when a lot of it starts coming in. So I'm there writing while I'm driving. I've scared a few passengers, to say. But like my books, they come in spasms. Somebody on an interview a few months ago said, are you working on another book? And I said, yeah, I probably am. They kind of blinked, and I said, well, fact is, you never know when it's coming. So I tell all my writers, if something, you wake up in the middle of the night and you've got a verse or a tune going around in your head, get up and write it down. I put a line in one of my songs on this album that I wrote probably 20 years ago. The line on Ain't No Flies on Me. And I've heard somebody say it. It's just, boy, that pretty well covers it all. Because my friends in Tennessee have all those country colloquialisms, you know. And my one friend that I modeled my character in Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, I modeled it after him. He had more of those phrases. Lots of times when he'd be talking, I'd start laughing. He'd say, what are you laughing at, boy? You know. it's just what you just said. What did I say? You know.
That's awesome. Now, that sheriff that you played, or as you talked about, the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, it was on Broadway. You played Sheriff Ed Earl Dodd. Now, I was reading up that some of this came about because of Bruce Springsteen. So, you know, I'm kind of sitting here wondering how that all came together.
Well, I was hosting a variety telethon in Iowa, and I was helping to make this young man who came off from the show Taxi, make him look good. And he needed it. Anyway, that night, a knock on my door. Springsteen, his manager, was there, and they were just finishing something. They came over. One thing led to another, and they brought me to New York, and where I proceeded to make one mistake. I cut a country album in New York. People in Nashville didn't like that. so that right. went nowhere. But they signed me with Columbia. But while I was there, they were auditioning because there was only about 6 more months of the show to go, and they arranged for the audition. And I just went in, and I read what they call the sides, and went in the other room, practiced a little bit. When I come out, I just played my next-door neighbor, Pappy. I said, and now he's, well, you know, kind of like that. And that's
amazing.
How that came about. And then went on the road with it for another year.
What was that like doing something like that live on stage now instead of just singing songs on stage as yourself? You're a character. Was that a lot of fun?
Dave, the neat part is you got to be this character. And I got in my normal stage act, I would never curse, okay? But here's this
right.
character, Errol Dodd, that curses, right? So I get out and I get to do all this cursing. I'll never forget our opening night after New York was in Salt Lake City, and I thought, they're going to kill me. But I got rave reviews. I swear the Mormons were out writing down all these curse words. Anyway, after each show, there were, in each one of the cities, they would usually have a get-together with the socialites or the Who Said It's or the greatest magnitude of the town. And here'd be these little old ladies come up going, oh, that was so wonderful. I think these ladies are saying I'm wonderful, and I cursed my, you know, I bad mouth. But it was different. But you got to be this character and do and
right.
and get all the things that as artists that we strive for, which is the love and the applause, however you want to call it, and then you got to be yourself. So
yeah,
it was
That's pretty amazing.
A big transition. And I do
did
it
you
again
do
in
any
a
other...
heartbeat.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you do any other theater after that? I know you've done sitcoms and so forth, but did you do any other stage work after that production?
No, but I did a reprise of the role in Edmonton at the Mayfield Inn.
Great.
I think that was about 1992 or 3, somewhere along there. And that was fun because we got to work with a lot of new young people, Canadian people. It was pretty cool. Nobody could understand my drawl. They all expect you to say something like, hey, what are shoes for? You know?
And you almost need subtitles.
Yeah.
When life was full of empty and I wondered what to do, some days would come without the sun and feelings colored blue. In olden days with olden ways, those days would seem unkind, 'cause I never knew just what it was that cluttered up my mind. So I would take my feelings out without a doubt on someone who did not deserve to be the one unkindly spoken to. But miracles do happen, and I'm learning how to see the secrets of the universe are all inside of me. There are none so blind as those who will not see. I heard somewhere, as I stumble down the road of life, not going anywhere, God give me strength is what I cried. If only I had known that when you learn to lean on God, you learn to stand alone. Now in this circle of pure love that I found inside of me, I'm learning how to love myself and everything I see. Miracles do happen, and it's very plain to see. The choice of who I am is mine, God's greatest gift to me. As I look into the mirror every morning, every day, reflections of the past sometimes are hard to keep away. but I choose to see the me I am, not what I used to be. And even when it's raining now, the sun still shines on me, and I look forward to tomorrow, even though it's still today. 'Cause now is what I'm living for instead of yesterday. Yes, miracles do happen, it's very plain to see. If you want to see a miracle, take a look at you.
It's a beautiful song.
What
can you tell us about it and the meaning behind it, Blake?
Well, you remember I mentioned about Lou Theis. I discovered, he told me that it was okay to be me, and he told me that was what I first learned about post-traumatic stress disorder. And he said the miracle is that you survived it, that kind of thing. And he
right.
says, you know, write. Why don't you write something about how you feel? And it's okay to expose yourself, your feelings, and that's how that song came about. And when I work with the Wounded Warriors, I'll sing that one to them, and they look inside and go, yeah, that's me. It's the choice of who I am is mine, and. It's the choices that we made. A lot of things we don't realize in our lives, we're exactly where we've chosen to be. You got to do this radio show and be because somewhere in your mind you decided you were going to do it.
That's right.
It becomes the dominant thought, and you move toward and become like that, what you think. And there you go. It sounds so simple, but when you really cut the life down to the simplicity, that's what it is. But they don't teach us that in schools. They always
No, and that's so important. The way we think is going to create our reality. The thoughts we block and don't focus on, you know, that stuff will get further away from us. But you're right, it's not taught, and sometimes we end up learning it, hopefully, at some point in life.
Oh, yeah. You just said a key word, the thoughts we block. If somebody says to you, no way, well, they block out the way.
Yeah.
we do it every day.
Exactly.
And I enjoy working with the kids in the schools. It's great. It gives me. Unfortunately, you don't hear about all the good kids. All you ever hear about is the bad ones. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get to see the good ones. I worked one time with a group of 10. The youngest one was 15. The oldest was 20, and each one of them had killed one person. To watch the turnaround that happened with them, it was incredible. It's very, it gives me great hope, you know.
And what message, Blake, are you looking to pass on when you go to the schools? What is your main message that you're conveying?
Well, if you think you can do it, then do it you will. And when you do it, you'll know when it's done, that just in the doing is most of the fun. It's not so much. There's a term that we use, and it's probably the biggest words that I use when I'm talking with the young people. It's self-efficacy, and that is one's own opinion of one's own ability to be bigger than the challenge, or the challenge to be bigger than you. In other words, if you think you can't do it, then the challenge is bigger than you, and that's what will be. But if you think you can do it, then you'll invent the how. That's like our committees when we were putting together the first ever Wounded Warriors Weekend. Wow. It was so neat when someone said, well, we can't do that. And I'd look at them and say, well, if that's what you think, then that's what we'll be. And it was so much fun watching our committees come together and creating what we did.
That's awesome. I want to come back and talk about the Wounded Warriors Weekend and your participation involvement in that. Well, let's talk about some of the sitcoms, because I was, first of all, watching earlier, and I saw the clip of you on The Joker's Wild, which was so cool. I used to watch that show, and you were a contestant. That led to some good things. Tell us about that. It's on YouTube for listeners who haven't seen it.
Well, the neat thing is I loved Bill. because Bill was a differently abled person. A lot of people didn't know it, but he had polio. And if he ever stepped out from behind the podium, he walked, ambled.
Right.
So he was like one of my heroes. And to be on the show was really terrific. And then later on to be selected to not replace him, but to do a version of his, of the show. Wow, this is something. My friend Jim Perry, he was the one that coached me and said, you can do it. and they would take me around to the different game shows that, in California. You want to hear something really funny, man?
Yeah.
We went to see Password, and
right.
The young man that was hosting, Bert Convy, he was great. But I had a friend that they used to play Klinger on the MASH show. So he was the star.
Yeah, Jamie
Farr. Jamie Farr. And there was this, his guest, like a citizen, was this black dude from Alabama. So Bert Convy says, the password is deer. Of course, the guy can't hear it, you know. So Jamie Farr looks at the guy and he says, doe. And the guy looked back at him and said, knob. Now, when you're shooting a game show, they never stop rolling tape, but they had to stop because Convy fell down laughing, so Jamie Farr slid off his chair. The audience went nuts. It was just great. Little things like that. I enjoyed doing it, but we did it in L.A. to start with, and then they moved it to Montreal, and I opted not to do it anymore.
Right. But you went on to do CTV's Funny Farm. Now, that may have been prior to that, but tell us about that show. It was sort of Canada's answer to Hee Haw.
Yeah, it was. I think the jokes were a little more intellectual than Hee Haw. But, of course, we had, and we modeled it a little bit like Laugh-In, sort of, a little
right.
from here, a little from there. But we had actors that played characters rather than on Hee Haw. Those were genuine characters. So we had the three girls, Shirley Will, Betty Won't, and Daisy May, and the preacher was named Pastor Prime. We kind of got away with subtle little innuendo on the show. And, of course, we had those three outhouses with Dutch doors. It was a real joy to do because we just had fun with it.
Right.
Even like when the Statler brothers came up, they went nuts jumping around the hay mow and things. And also, I learned a little bit about television audience because we would do this thing in the pack room, and they gave me a banjo to play. Well, I didn't know how to play banjo, so I tuned the top four strings just like I would a guitar. I didn't have a problem with that. But we'd get fan mail saying, you're the greatest banjo player I ever heard. And I thought, wow. I have friends that would argue with that.
Do you have a country music idol, Blake? Somebody from the world of country music that you've always looked up to and is sort of the personification of country music for you?
Well, if I have an idol, I've got some heroes.
Sure.
Jack Green, bless his heart. I just love him dearly. I had the opportunity to work with him on so many occasions, and now he has a dementia, so to speak. And my other heroine is Jean Shepherd. She's been a friend right from the get-go, way back. Somebody that, like I love the artists that we have in Saskatchewan. Yannicka, Wyatt, Catherine Lewins, Will Ardell. Someone who I've never met, but I love what he does. Number one from the music. And right the other day I'm listening, I thought, well, son of a gun. He stole my line, because I've been signing my emails and everything for years with the phrase "life is good." I didn't invent
right.
that line. Anyway, Gord Banford, he wrote it. I think he did. It's a great song.
It is a great song.
I'm going, okay, God, why didn't you send that one to me instead of to him?
Well, a great song that you did write and perform, we're going to share now, Blake, called, it's a nice up-tempo one. It's got a great message in it as well, called You Can Fight Hell. What can you tell us about this song? Love this song.
I was at a leadership conference in the middle of the Rocky Mountains at Lou Tice's ranch, and there present was General Cal Waller, second in command of Desert Storm. He wasn't at the time, but he became that.
Right.
And the chancellor of Harvard, the mayor of New Jersey, all of those kind of people. And Lou would speak at lunch, and after lunch I would go around with my guitar and sing my songs. Anyway, he's up there speaking, and I heard him say, with this stuff, you can fight hell with a bucket of water. I went, excuse me. So I went out to the kitchen, and I swear I wrote it in like 10, 15 minutes, and I came back and sang it.
That's amazing. Let's share it now. Blake Emmons, we've got lots more to talk about with Blake in just a few moments. This is You Can Fight Hell here on In the Country.
Well, I never was much for learning all the things they try to teach me in school. But my pappy taught me things no one else could, because he lived by the golden rule. I didn't get no diploma, but my daddy would be proud of me. Cause ever since the day that my daddy passed away, I've been doing like he said to me. He said, you can fight hell with a bucket of water. You can climb any mountain to the top. All you gotta do is keep believing in you, and there ain't no way you're gonna get stopped. If you got a good team, you can fly the whole world and harvest everything that you sow. If your mission is right and you play every night, there ain't no place you can't go. Was what my daddy said, and it turned out like he said it would. He said, you can fight hell with a bucket of water, you can climb any mountain to the top. All you gotta do is keep believing in you, and there ain't no way you're gonna get stopped. If you got a good team, you can plow the whole world and harvest everything that you sow. If your mission is right and you pray every night, there ain't no place you can't go. Yeah, you can fight hell with a bucket of water, you can climb any mountain to the top. All you gotta do is keep believing in you, and there ain't no way you're gonna get stopped. If you got a good team, you can plow the whole world and harvest everything that you sow. If your mission is right and you pray every night, there ain't nowhere you can't go. If your mission is right and you pray every night, there ain't no place you can't go.
And that is my guest, Blake Emmons, You Can Fight Hell, here on In the Country. It's from his 2012 award-winning album from the Saskatchewan Country Music Association. The album is called I Can Be, and the website to visit Blake online at is blakeemmons.com. Now, let's talk about the Wounded Warriors Weekend. It's been around, I believe, since 2006. Take us through what it's all about, Blake.
Well, the Wounded Warriors Weekend was it came about. Actually, the very first one was our first weekend here in Nipawin, which took place in August. There's been Wounded Warriors events, which I wasn't aware of, but they were like one-day things. In the United States, they have the Wounded Warriors Project and Wounded Warriors Canada. They're two different entities, but with the same purpose. And I was recovering from surgery here, and I thought about it, and I got with my friend Jimmy Shute, and one thing led to another. We thought, well, we'll bring 20, and maybe 40. We ended up bringing 112, maybe a few more. But the thing was, is they were from the United States and Canada. And when I spoke with my friends here, well, I'll give you an example. CJVR, which is the Melford's main country station, I talked with Ken Singer, and I said, Ken, the thing is we'd like to talk about post-traumatic stress disorder. How do you feel about that? And he said, I'm in. And that's what we found even with the media. They allowed us, because up until this point in time, very few people were talking about it. And that was, the idea was to get these guys and gals together, because when they leave the military, they leave family. They got nobody to talk to. And we've been losing them right, left, and center. In the United States, it's 18 a month, and we've lost several in Canada to self, they just suicide. And we've got veterans on the homeless on the street because of it. And if there's one thing, it's like, I just think the word veteran and homeless should never be in the same sentence, but that's the truth of the matter. So anyway, we got them all together, and we did 3 days of fishing and golf and entertainment. The entertainment was incredible. Gordy Tapp, when I talked to him, he said, I'll be there. Gary Kogart and all of the young artists, from Samara Young to Amy Nelson, Larry Krause, all of them here, they just said, we'll be there too. And we put on 3 days that changed not only the Wounded Warriors' lives, but it changed the lives of our people here, right from the mayor on down. And the ripple effect has been that the lieutenant governor of our province, I had a meeting with her last week. They're about to try and designate the first weekend of August next year to be official civic holiday called Wounded Warriors Weekend. And this is the first time I've told anybody out loud. it's quite possible. We're going to make it happen. It's just exciting for me, because if I was to share with you, I can email you some of the letters and things, Dave, the difference that it's made in these young people's lives that have given everything they can, and they're not getting a fair shake. And I'm not coming down on our government or anything. I'm just saying that we need to pay a little bit more attention to mental health. And as
it must feel so great for you to see that difference, Blake, that Wounded Warriors Weekend is making, as you said, all the artists participating in. You're getting these letters, and you would send me one of them.
Oh, yes.
Got to feel great.
There's one. What happened in the last month before we actually had the event, I started hearing from wives of Wounded Warriors that had been passed over in the process. Or, you know, the one guy in particular, he came from Kingston. He was a warrant officer. He was out 7 years. But for 7 years, he'd been screwed up by PTSD. But the way they looked at him was, well, he's sort of not with us anymore. Well, it changed his life. And a young lady from LaRange reached out to us. So my committee people, we got together and said, hey, we can't stop at 60. And we just started saying, come on, we'll make room for you. And this lady, Mel Rustenberg, sent me a poem. And that night, I swear to God, Dave, I sat down here with my wife and I cried. I said, we are doing something good. We got to get these people here. Yes, it's had definitely an effect on me and our whole province.
Now, is there somewhere our listeners can head to online to read up on this or learn more about any specific websites that you know of?
Oh, well, there's the woundedwarriorsweekend.org. And I can tell you what has come out of it. We now have in place, almost in place, but there's been an alliance formed between the Royal Canadian Legion and Wounded Warriors Canada and the Pacific Institute, and there's a program coming online that will help. We're going to lay it out in Saskatchewan first. It will be made available to all our young vets and our older vets, and it will take place at the Legions all over the province, and we're going to combine it with the project called Leave the Streets Behind, and also follow it up with psychotherapists and follow-up. That's the thing. And also cut out the paperwork that so many people with post-traumatic stress disorder, they just don't want to handle 10 pages of applications and stuff. Ours will be really simple. We've all Leave the Streets Behind. It already has a phone number set up, and I think we'll probably get it rolled out by February. But it came directly out of our Wounded Warriors Weekend. And believe me, there will be more good to come from all of this, Dave. And for someone like you all to allow me to talk about it on radio, you can't buy that.
My pleasure, Blake. It's so great to hear about the positive things you're doing. And another positive thing we spoke on about earlier, the schools and the kids you're talking to. I've got the song ready now called Who You Are. Talk about working with the kids. And also there's a book as well that you've written that ties into all this.
Yeah, the book is something that, you know, that came from all. I spent a year with Stanford University and a man by the name of Dr. Al Bandura, who's the world's foremost leader with regards to self-efficacy. And, of course, Lou Tice, the phrase we're all familiar with is self-esteem and that. Anyway, when I go to the schools, my book is called If You Think You Can Do It. And I got a letter once when I first wrote it from a man by the name of Mark Victor Hansen, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul. And he said, "Congratulations, Blake. You're now officially the Dr. Seuss of the Gestalt set." Because all of my stuff is in rhyme. It's if you think you can do it, then do it you will. When you do it, you'll know when it's done. That just in the doing is most of the fun. What is the it that you wanted to do and you just didn't try and you can't explain why? And I go on and I talk to the kids about how our mind works. We're all the same. And how you think. And when you look in the mirror, what you will see is everything like you think it will be. And when I'm talking to the kids, I say, girls, how many times you look in the mirror and go, oh, man, I look like, oh, wow, I need to put some makeup on. And I said to the guys, and you look in there going, hey, pretty cool. Hey, we all do it.
Humor is such a big part of what you do, and humor is an effective tool, isn't it, when you're talking to kids or whoever. If you can put some laughter in it, the message goes along much better.
Oh, definitely, definitely. That's the one thing why Jimmy Shute and I get along. He's the funniest guy I know in my whole life. And during all the organization of what I do, he can find a laugh about something, and I try to also. Humor.
That's great. Let's turn to that song, Blake. I want to come back. Speaking of humor, I want to talk about some of the sitcoms you were on and get some stories about those. And we got lots more to cover. A lot of fun here tonight on In the Country. Right now, Blake Emmons and Who You Are.
When life was full of empty and I wondered what to do, some days would come without the sun and feelings colored blue. In olden days with olden ways, those days would seem unkind, 'cause I never knew just what it was that cluttered up my mind. So I would take my feelings out without a doubt on someone who did not deserve to be the one unkindly spoken to. But miracles do happen, and I'm learning how to see the secrets of the universe are all inside of me. There are none so blind as those who will not see. I heard somewhere as I stumbled down the road of life, not going anywhere. God give me strength is what I cried, if only I had known that when you learn to lean on God, you learn to stand alone. Now in this circle of pure love that I've found inside of me, I'm learning how to love myself and everything I see. Miracles do happen, and it's very plain to see. The choice of who I am is mine, God's greatest gift to me. As I look into the mirror every morning, every day, reflections of the past sometimes are hard to keep away. But I choose to see the me I am, not what I used to be. And even when it's raining now, the sun still shines on me. And I look forward to tomorrow, even though it's still today. 'cause now is what I'm living for instead of yesterday. Yes, miracles do happen, it's very plain to see. If you want to see a miracle, take a look at you and me.
And that is Blake Emmons here on In the Country with Who You Are from his award-winning album, I Can Be, and you can visit him online at blakeemmons.com. Now, Blake, let's talk about some of these sitcoms you were on. It was, I guess, following the times you were a game show host. And some of the names here I was reading and some of the shows I used to watch, Alice, Golden Girls, Mary Tyler Moore. Tell us all about these shows.
Well, the years that I spent in Los Angeles were wonderful. I spent a year trying to get settled and 5 years trying to get out of there because L.A. isn't my cup of tea. But I enjoyed it. My favorite was I met Bea Arthur. She came to do one of my charity things in Iowa. And she said, you know, you need to come out there. And a producer or an agent by the name of Harry Gold was there. And he said the same thing. Well, my friend Peter Marshall said the same thing. And then Leonard Nimoy says, you're coming out. And I said, how do you know? He says, because you'll always wonder if you could have made it. And sure enough, so I go out there, and I lived at Bea Arthur's for a year in her guest house, and she became a true friend, and I got to meet Rue and Betty White. As a matter of fact, it was my conversations with Bea that I told her she was off, had finished doing Maude and one other thing that she didn't like doing. And she got this offer from Canada to do the commercials for the drugstore. I said, go and do it. So she went up to Montreal and did all that. And then I get this call and she said, have you heard anything about a new show with Betty White? And then I said, no, it's news to me. Anyway, it was already in the bag. And I got to be there when they did the pilot show and a few others. And then I got to read for a part. And I did three. And I played like a sheriff and a neighbor and things like that, the cowboy in a bar, just little bit parts. But the neat thing is this, Dave, I still get checks to this day.
Wow.
Yeah, because who'd have thunk back then there wasn't 500,000 TV stations or what we've got now. So every time it plays in Borneo or some new place, I get a check for like $49 or something. It's kind of neat.
But neat.
I got to read for things like when I went to read for Alice, I also read for another part for one of those movies that's kind of like, I'm trying to think of, just one of those teenage comedy things that, you know, there was plenty of them. And I was supposed to play, the part I was reading for was this German kind of Nazi kind of guy that ran the hotel. And so I dressed up, black leather pants, gray shirt, black tie, and I talked like this here. And so I'm supposed to read for the part, and you walk into the room, and there's like a producer, a director, some other, you know. Like when I read for Dallas, holy cow, there was the big guy himself. I had to read with him. That was freaky. Anyway, getting back to this one. So I'm thinking one of them will read the female part. So I read it, and I'm going, so, what is this that you're learning? And the door comes open, and here comes this lady, good-looking, absolutely bare naked. Now I got to really concentrate. So I finish the reading, and they say, that's really good, thank you very much. Now I go down to the street, get into my van, and I'm looking, and I have a grocery list that B asked me to pick up, and I'm thinking, this is bizarre. One minute, you're standing in a room with a bare naked lady and four strangers, and the next minute you're going, we need eggs, butter, milk.
What a great story. Do you have a favorite sitcom yourself as a viewer, Blake, one that you consistently can get laughs from?
Oh, yeah. The one that really sends me right around the bend now is The Big Bang.
The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. The writers are incredible. And, of course, the acting is great, too. I look at that guy and I say, how do you remember all that technical stuff? I have a friend, Jason Cook, that plays a doctor on a medical show, and he tells me how hard it is to learn all the medical terminology. And I hear these guys doing all that, the physics and stuff, and it has to be right because people will call in and complain.
That's true.
That's the one that I laugh at most, really. If I watch TV at all, I watch that, and I watch History Channel. I'm not too much into reality shows. It's like I used to watch MTV when they played music.
When they played music, exactly. They've gone and changed.
What? Yeah, what's happening? Don't get me on that rant.
Doesn't make sense. If you could play an ideal character, whether it's in a movie or a TV show, like, you know, sort of create your own character, who do you think, what kind of role would fit you best? Would you like to be a leading man, a character, a villain?
The funny thing is I've done a couple of movies, you know, they're bit parts, but I always play some psychotic nutcase. or a sheriff. Like when I did Nashville 99, I played a sheriff. When I did Best Little Whorehouse, I played a sheriff. On Golden Girls, I played a sheriff. On Alice, I played a cop. I like the, for some reason, I guess I look like a sheriff. I don't know. I like the action adventure ones that are, you know, kind of a fantasy. That's kind of like what I like to watch. But in essence, if I really watch TV, I think I've got TiVo. The one now they're going to show about how the world began or something. I find that more interesting now.
Let's turn to another song from the album called I Can Be, which again won 2012 SCMA Award for Album of the Year. This song we're going to play is called Go Down to the Well, another one that you wrote. What can you tell us about it, Blake?
It was inspired by my grandpa. He was an incredible guy. And I learned more about him over the years. After things happened, like I remember one time, I've come from the Ottawa Valley. That's where I was born and raised. And he lived in a little place called Almont at the farm. You know, everybody had a rain barrel, and we're going by it, and I saw him flip a 50-cent piece in it. And I looked in it, and it was really dark. You see, you can get that if you want it more. But I also learned years later when I was in California, the water filters there were impregnated with silver to keep the moss from growing. And I thought, wow, my grandpa was a smart dude. That's what that's what they put in the rain barrel. There never was any moss on it. But, he was the inspiration of it. And then when I left home when I was 11 and came out here to Saskatchewan, and a farmer took me in, and I love who these people are. And the love of the land and the beliefs. Anyway, that's how that song came about. I like to perform it It's kind of nice. And people call it, hey, play the grandpa song. It reminds me of. But once again, it goes into the thought process of reach down, you know, deep inside you. You're the only guy that can do it, can make your flowers grow.
Let's share it now. This is Blake Emmons and Go Down to the Well on In the Country.
When I was young, I used to visit Grandpa, a farming man so simple in his ways. Now when life presents me with its problems, I remember things my grandpa used to say. I remember we were walking through the fields he plowed. Every step we took, the dust would blow. With loving hands, he put the seeds into the ground. I said, Grandpa, I don't think that they will grow. He said, go down to the well and fetch some water. Bring it up and see how clear it flows. It's sprinkle it around you in your garden. See how it will make your flowers grow. Life is like the well you fetch the water from. It'll scare you some cause it's so dark and deep, but from the darkness you will find the clearest water comes. Someday you'll understand just what I mean. And life is like the seeds I put into the ground. They lay in darkness waiting to be free. The mighty oak, the apple, and the roses all know exactly what they're gonna be. All they need is just a little water to start them on their way to being free. They struggle hard until they finally see the light, and then they be what they were meant to be. About what Grandpa said, even though he's just a memory. The words he spoke as we walked through the fields he plowed keep coming from the well inside of me. He said, go down to the well and fetch some water, bring it up and see how clear it flows. Sprinkle it around you in your garden. See how it will make your flowers grow. You're the only one can make your flowers grow.
Saskatchewan country artist Blake Emmons and Go Down to the Well. That is from his award-winning album called I Can Be. Blake, it has been such a pleasure sharing the stories and sharing these great songs on the show.
Oh, it's been my joy, Dave, and I appreciate the music, not just that you played mine, but I love the music that you play. It's country.
My guest tonight has been Saskatchewan country artist Blake Emmons. I'm Dave Woods. It's been another big night in the country.